Economicsense.com.
This is the morning brief from the Economic Times, produced in collaboration with Awaaz.com.
There has been a 40% increase in cyber attacks in India this year, which exposed the vulnerabilities in our financial, medical, and personal data. This has made many people scared about online transactions. My father, for instance, like many senior citizens this year, has been forced to accept the digital way of living, but warned time and again about phishing, ransom attacks, and frauds. He now gets worried when he is asked for personal data for a transaction. From the Economic Times, I'm Devina Sengupta, and you're listening to The Morning Brief. In today's podcast, I've invited N.S. Napinai, Advocate Supreme Court of India and founder of Cyber Sathi, which works in creating awareness and safety online. We also have Anandi Chandrasekhar, who has been extensively writing on the rise in cyber crimes for the Economic Times. They will explain how safe are we, our government and corporate India from cyber attacks. Thank you, Napinai and Anandi, for being with us on this podcast. Napinai, I'll start with you. India has seen a 40% increase in cyber attacks in 2020. And as early as August, the government said there were 7 lakh attacks compared to 2019, which saw far fewer attacks. Which areas and sectors are most vulnerable according to you?
There are two things. One is that we have moved more to the digital space during 2020, thanks to COVID, the lockdown, etc. One of the reasons for the increase could be that, but I also believe that there was not enough reporting when it came to cyber crimes. So what you see reported may not necessarily reflect the true picture, which is far worse than what you see, you know, from statistics. With respect to the question in terms of what are the kind of cyber crimes we are seeing now, it's predominantly financial frauds. You will have a variety even with respect to financial frauds that impact individuals. Today, a lot of e-commerce and digital transactions are done through UPI-based wallet. Now, with UPI, the biggest harm that you see is it's linked to your bank account. So the minute you share your OTP, you are actually giving an access not just to a wallet the way you did earlier when you were still using a digital wallet which had a limited amount of money, but you're actually linking it to the bank account.
Right. So that's an important point because when you mentioned that the attacks are getting more and more sophisticated, basically. But this year is a special one because it's a COVID year. Almost all our payments, every transaction is digital. And I was reading that one important sector which becomes more and more vulnerable are the senior citizens. You know, they have just gotten onto digital payments and transactions. Even the medical records are vulnerable today. How strong are our cybersecurity laws to defend these citizens?
There are two kinds of vulnerable sectors, I would say. One is, of course, senior citizens, because they have come to a domain which they are not very familiar with. So there is a sense of fear even when you approach the domain. But I think the larger concern also is of the millennials who are very comfortable with the domain. So that comfort also translates to complacency. So you think you're safe and then you feel that you feel very confident and you end up making a mistake. And there are two reasons why these crimes also occur. One is, of course, fear. The other is convenience. And that's what impacts millennials, you know. So everything, like you get an SMS which comes with a link. And so you think you just have to click the link and you will. It's very convenient. And when you have committed these mistakes, the first reaction is a sense of shame. So a victim is reluctant even to take the remedies which are available in law. So you hear a lot about how our cybersecurity laws are not sufficient or they have to be revamped, etc. I'm totally with the aspect about revamping the laws. You know, IT Act was never meant to address cyber crimes to begin with. On the issue that you raised, the problem is not lack of laws. According to me, the problem is the lack of effective implementation even of existing laws. Whatever little we may have, even that, if it is implemented properly, there will be a sense of fear even in the mind of the culprit.
Right.
But if you don't have effective enforcement, then you are emboldening the criminal.
When you mentioned, Napina, in that part where you said fear, there is lack of fear, Anandi has recently written a very interesting story in Economic Times on how hackers and people who are participating in cyber attacks, you know, even in the smallest way, the story behind them. Anandi, you had mentioned how unemployment and no stringent laws have made hackers out of college students. So when you are talking to stakeholders and different people associated with it, what is the kind of trend that you are spotting as far as hackers is concerned?
Yes, Devina, it's rather interesting, actually. So what's been happening is in the last few months, in fact, across places like Mathura, Mewat, and Bharatpur, these are small towns in states like Uttar Pradesh, Rajasthan, and Haryana. So there are around 20 to 30,000 young people, as we understand from cyber cops. Many of them are graduates who are part of these gangs that scam people through calls, by sending these SMS links, etc. And this has actually risen in the past few months due to unemployment and due to, you know, it's an easy way to make a quick buck. So that's gone up. And in fact, the reason is a lot of these entry level computer professionals, like if they're, say, they're data entry persons or even trainee software engineers, if they've lost their jobs and can't find another one, this happens to be a very quick and easy way to make money. So that's been happening. And in fact, if you see, this kind of scamming is probably going to get even more sophisticated.
You know, Napina, I was telling Anandi the other day that there was a story we had once reported on how in one of the top auditing companies, a group of people had just walked in, assuming that they are recruiters of that particular company, opened their doors for people to come in, did the interviews, took money out of them. And before the HR of that company realized, the recruiters, the so-called recruiters had vanished, taking away all the money from the candidates. But now, of course, things have changed completely. In this day and age, Napina, I wanted to ask you is, the government is proposing bans and has already banned 200 plus apps. Do you think these kind of app bans or blanket bans are going to work, assuming that they are a threat to security and data?
Firstly, you can't ban an app for personal security. It has been done for in the name of national security. So the parameters for a ban are very different from that for a takedown, for instance. So you can only ban any online platform when it falls within four of the parameters that are set out in the reasonable restrictions under Article 19. So the security that they are talking about there is of national security and not personal security. What you were mentioning, Devina, on terms of the kind of frauds that are happening today, two kinds you will see. One is that they were creating fake accounts which are similar to the PM Care Fund, right? So you have an advisory therefore telling you what not to give to, but when you look at the advisory, you will realize it's so difficult to even recognize the difference because everything seems similar. Likewise, the fear factor was used for making fake COVID apps. So all of these are done to put malware into your system. And through that malware also, they can then access your personal details, including banking, medical, etc., which is what you mentioned earlier. So today, when we talk about government action, most of it seems to be focusing on creating awareness, telling us what to do or what not to do. But what the focus should be on is effective prosecutions. One of the places Anandi didn't mention was Jharkhand, and everybody talks about the Jamtara crimes, but if you know even from where, which village it is emanating from, why is there not a visible and effective example of enforcement which will then deter these youngsters who are now highly educated and knowledgeable youngsters who are getting into these crimes.
Napina, is it because the group of people is very fluid? It's not like a one major nexus which can easily be caught hold of. For instance, we are right now discussing about tier 2 and tier 3. But at the same time, what does the consumer or citizen do when you hear that the last grid failure, electricity failure, where the city of Mumbai was without electricity for almost the entire day, was actually not just a grid failure, but could be the result of a cyber attack?
Well, let me just give you an example. In 2015, a similar attack on electricity grid happened through hacking and a distributed denial of service attack. Ukraine took all of only 3 hours to bounce back, you know, and they are tech savvy. India is not any less tech savvy. Most of the technological innovations are coming from Indians, but we don't seem to have, or we don't seem to display the same kind of, expertise when it comes to India as a territory. So we need to see where we are losing out. And that's why I keep emphasizing the need for enforcement. And one of the other messages that I have been carrying forward through Cyber Sathi is for victims to file complaints. Because Devina, you're very right that it is a fluid set of people. It's not like one individual or one small set of people who are committing these crimes. It's a huge racket. So what you said about the Mumbai electricity issue, I do not know whether it's just fear-mongering or there is some basis to it that it could have been a hack. But I just pointed out the Ukraine incident to show that it is feasible. It is not far-fetched.
Anandi, I wanted to ask you is, just the way as you have hackers of either kind, when you are talking to institutes, when you're talking to people around, is there any way that we can have more ethical hackers?
Yeah, Devina, it's interesting that you ask that because, in fact, I just wanted to mention a bit because Napinai also addressed the whole COVID aspect, COVID apps and things like that. So in fact, as far as medical data is concerned, we're seeing a lot of ethical hackers sort of informing government authorities about when medical data of people gets compromised. It's very interesting because the CERT director, Sanjay Bell, had said a few months ago that in fact, healthcare has become a very attractive target for cyber criminals. And, the reason is very obvious, right? It's because, and it's quite a sad one at that, because what happens is healthcare providers and institutions are obviously on the front line fighting this pandemic. And attackers will tell them, pay up or we'll freeze your entire IT network. And since it's literally a life or death situation, many hospitals and institutions would be inclined to pay such ransoms. So that's something that's been happening. Now, as far as ethical hackers are concerned, what they do is they sort of alert bodies like the CERT, and sometimes they even come and tell us journalists about patient records being available on the internet. So I definitely see a trend where a lot more awareness is being raised by ethical hackers as far as medical data is concerned.
There was also a recent report on one of the recent data breach issues. Ethical hacking is where a person is hired by an organization to test their systems. When a person who is technologically savvy hacks into another person or entity's systems without the consent of the organization or the owner of that system, then it is not ethical hacking. Because a lot of youngsters particularly get very confused about it. They think that they can hack into any system, and if they do not mean harm, that amounts to ethical hacking. That is not so.
So, Napin, I wanted to ask you is when someone like, let's say me or my father right now is using a countless number of apps for any transaction, when someone like us, a common man, gets impacted, where should he or she go?
For us individuals, if you fall prey to a victim, today you have a very, very simple remedy, cybercrime.gov.in. So you can file your complaint online, Devina, on this platform, and it is open for everybody. The advantage you get is you can sit at home, give your complaint, but after that you have to participate in the prosecution in the regular manner. But thereafter, you can track what has happened to your complaint. You don't have to necessarily do only this. If you would prefer, you can still go physically to your local police station and you can file it there. Where there are cybercrime cells within a particular jurisdiction, then either the police station will tell you or they will take your complaint and then transfer it to the cybercrime cell.
Do you see the tech companies, I mean, where are tech firms, are they more involved in solving the cyber crimes? How are they taking it ahead?
Devina, so a lot of our tech firms are quite involved. And in fact, the whole cybersecurity policy that the government has said that it would come up with, I think it would be closely watched because companies will look to give their feedback on what is required to ensure that these criminals are booked and cybercrime is taken a lot more seriously. But as rudimentary as it gets, the expectation is just that this whole cybersecurity policy for companies and for citizens like us will discourage data theft to begin with. Because, you know, you have cybersecurity experts saying the reason why a lot of Indian data, a lot of digital marketing, or a lot of things are, they're very easy to get away with in India because we don't have strong policies. We don't have policies on these aspects. So, you know, that is one hope that, you know, a cybersecurity policy will help secure citizen data and you know, also give a framework to companies as to what is okay and to what extent they can take someone's data and to what extent and what they shouldn't touch at all.
Finally, Napin, I wanted to ask you is, what are the top three countries you reckon who have the most stringent cybersecurity laws?
We have a lot of precedents to follow in this regard. So I would put Singapore laws are fairly stringent. You have good precedents to take from UK and US, etc. Of course, in US, you have both state and federal laws, etc. But, you know, there is a surprise element here, Devina, and that is of Sri Lanka. No, nobody really talks about Sri Lanka's cybersecurity laws, you know, and really impressed with the simplicity and the crispness of these Sri Lankan laws.
Right. That was really interesting. Sri Lanka, I would have never thought so. And thank you, Napinai and Anandi, for breaking down how hacking has become more sophisticated and what the government can do to implement stringent action. While the government has banned apps citing threats, the people are still vulnerable to cyber threats from a wide range of other sources, both inside and outside the country. Beware, because there might just be a Jamtara right next to your city where college dropouts have access to your data. I'm Devina Sengupta and you've been listening to The Morning Brief. This episode was edited by Indulekha Arvind and coordinated by Bhavya Dilip Kumar. You can send in your comments at themorningbrief@timesgroup.com. The Morning Brief airs every Tuesday, Thursday and Friday. Thank you for listening and have a nice day ahead.
Awaaz.com